940 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Monica Ricks. At least four people have now died in Oklahoma, where tornadoes have caused widespread damage and power outages. Governor Kevin Stitt posted a message on X today. He's checking out damage in Sulphur.
Just declared a emergency disaster so we can get all the help that those communities need.
CBS's Omar Villafranca also in Sulphur, about 80 miles from Oklahoma City.
The cleanup here is going to be extensive. I mean, we're seeing piles and pieces of metal just wrapped around trees two or three stories up. We're seeing roofs that have collapsed down.
Tornado damage also reported in parts of Nebraska and Iowa. And the threat is not over. Meteorologist Brian Hurley's tracking conditions at the National Weather Service.
The highest risk area that we're really watching, basically from Shreveport and Texarkana down to Tyler and Longview, Texas.
More tornadoes there are possible. The White House says President Biden spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today ahead of a possible invasion in Gaza.
The two reviewed ongoing talks to release the hostages together with an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The leaders also discussed the southern city of Rafah. The president reiterated his position discouraging Israel from moving forward with a ground invasion in the region, as millions of Palestinian civilians are sheltered there. Skyler Henry, CBS News, Washington.
World Central Kitchen says its operations will resume in Gaza tomorrow. Its humanitarian work has been suspended there for weeks following the deaths of seven aid workers killed by an Israeli airstrike. Here at home, protests are escalating on college campuses like UCLA, where dueling demonstrations have resulted in several fights today between pro-Palestinian protesters and those rallying around the university's Jewish students. Many groups have vowed to dig in this week and keep those efforts going. Harvey Weinstein spent the last few days in a hospital in New York.
Harvey Weinstein's attorney says the disgraced movie mogul is at a New York City hospital for a host of tests after being moved to Rikers Island Jail Friday. He arrived there from the upstate prison he's been in since his 2020 rape conviction. His 23-year prison sentence has now been erased, and he's set to be in court Wednesday, where his attorney says they'll ask that a retrial should occur after Labor Day.
That's CBS's Matt Piper reporting. And Madonna wrapped up her celebration tour last night in Mexico City with a special appearance by actress Selma Hayek. She was the guest drag judge during Vogue. The career-spanning tour got a late start last fall for Madonna after she suffered a serious bacterial infection. She's got one show left, but it's a free show in Brazil next Saturday. About 2 million fans are expected to show up. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Consumer advocates are warning people about the hidden costs of taking out small loans on smartphone apps. Here's Mike Moe.
The Center for Responsible Lending is out with findings that detail how earned wage advances from digital platforms come with extra costs disguised as things like tips. Traditional payday lenders are often criticized for charging excessive interest rates on loans that are usually around $500. The center's Lucia Constantine says customers are usually seeking smaller amounts from the apps, but she warns they can be just as costly.
They are trapping consumers in a cycle of borrowing that is similar to that of a payday loan.
The report says after using these financial products, customers are seeing overdrafts on their checking accounts increase by 56% on average. Industry leaders deny they're barraging customers with hidden fees, stressing that features like suggested tips are optional. More broadly, a bipartisan payday loan reform bill in the Wisconsin legislature failed to advance this month. Constantine says, like longstanding payday lenders, these cash advance apps can be hard to regulate. Meanwhile, she urges those in a bind to explore other options.
Try talking to their friends and family as a first source. The other option, which I would recommend, is reaching out to their credit union or banking institution to see if they can get some sort of small dollar loan.
She says places like credit unions typically provide more transparency on loan costs. According to the report, 3/4 of consumers took out at least one advance on the same day or day after a repayment was posted. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Showers and thunderstorms tonight and temperatures in the mid-50s. Scattered showers on your Monday. It will be breezy again with a high near 69. Monday night, partly cloudy, 46. And we clear things out for Tuesday, sunshine with highs near 70. Showers return Tuesday night.
Currently 42 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow.
Monday morning, we'll talk live with former and maybe future Congressman Peter Barca about his decision to run this fall in Southeast Wisconsin's 1st District.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, weekday mornings starting at 6. You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Kicking off this weekend's edition of Civic Media Spotlight, we head to Governor Nelson State Park for a live-on-location, wild edition of the Todd Alba Show to celebrate Earth Day.
Live on location, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide with the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Alba, live on location, as Terry Barr said, here at beautiful Governor Nelson State Park on the north shore of Lake Mendota in beautiful Dane County. Happy Earth Day 2024. Glad to have you all along with us and joining us back at the home station, live atop State Street to block off the Capitol Square. Our producer engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers. Happy Earth Day, Mr. Zommers. How the heck are you?
Doing well. Happy Earth Day to you as well, Todd. Looks like it's a little windy out there.
It's a tad windy, but all in all, for spring in late April, absolutely gorgeous. Temperatures in the upper 50s, almost 60. They're saying a high of 64. Wind's a bit gusty, but looking about 50 yards from me, and I would say there are about 75 volunteers doing some cleanup here at Governor Nelson State Park and planting trees. I know Governor Evers was here earlier today, so we are in celebration. So Mr. Zommers, a little bit later, we're going to have Matt Flynn, our colleague, joins us on Mondays. He has a remembrance of campaigning with former U.S. Senator and Governor Nelson, so looking forward to Matt's remembrances of Governor Nelson. And we might have one of our two state archaeologists, Zach Stenzel, is here in the park leading this cleanup effort today. So we might hear from him as well. Right now, though, we are pleased and honored to be joined by our featured guest today on this Earth Day, none other than Tia Nelson. She is the daughter of the late great governor and U.S. Senator from the state of Wisconsin, of which this beautiful park is named after, and joining us live from the Seattle area via StreamYard, Tia Nelson. Tia, thank you so much for taking the time to join us, and happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day to you, Todd. It's a pleasure to be on your show, and I'm grateful for your efforts to help tell the Earth Day story.
Well, thank you so much. We've known each other. I worked for a former state senator, Majority Leader Dale Schultz, for a time, and I know you were very involved in the state, land trust area and preserving the environment and your own conservation efforts. But before we get into that, take us back, because all of us can read on Wikipedia or Google, and we all know, or at least I think most of our listening audience would know, that your dad was the one that started Earth Day. Of course, there were several others, as there always are, and it was in fact a bipartisan effort. But for you, as a daughter of the founder of Earth Day, what are your personal remembrances of this day, and what does it mean to you personally?
Well, I was in junior high school on the first Earth Day. I had no notion whatsoever of how momentous that day was. 20 million people gathered that first Earth Day, April 22nd, 1970, largest public event in U.S. history. But I had no awareness of that. And I was in junior high and I did what many school kids did then and today. I was out on the school grounds and down at Rock Creek Park in Maryland, where we lived at the time, cleaning up trash.
Right. Was it something you remember your dad talking about at home? Was this a kind of a passion project, or was it more one of those things where that was just part of his job, and at home it was more personal?
Well, my father, you know, he grew up in a small town in northern Wisconsin, Clear Lake in Polk County, and nature was his playground, and that imbued in him a love and passion for nature and the environment from a very early age, and it stayed with him throughout his life. And there was really no distinguishing between his personal passion for the environment and his professional commitment to advance sound public policy around those environmental issues, clean air, clean water. And when he was elected governor, he put a penny a pack tax on cigarettes for a dedicated fund to acquire parks, recreation lands, places to hunt and fish in Wisconsin. And he did so much for the environment that they called him, he earned the moniker, the conservation governor, which he was very proud of. Though I hasten to add, my good friend, former governor Tommy Thompson, likes to tease me that he brags that he protected more acreage than my father did. I'm really happy to hear a Republican brag about such a thing these days, you know?
Well, and I want to get to that in a moment, that the fact that you and I talked just briefly a couple of days ago before this, the fact that, you know, the history of Earth Day and conservation in Wisconsin has not been partisan. It has been bipartisan in the past. I want to play a cut that you sent us. I want to credit Susan Bentz from Milwaukee Public Radio. We're going to play this. It's about a minute long of your father and his reflections from a speech at the very first Earth Day. Here is, and we're going to get your reaction to it. Here is former U.S. Senator and Governor Gaylord Nelson and a speech at the very first Earth Day.
How do we accomplish what we want? In a representative democracy, you've got all the tools. You have them all. They don't work unless you use them. What we must establish all across this country is nonpartisan political action, environmental organizations in every community in America and every state and nationwide. And all the environmental problems of the community should be inventoried. And every member, every candidate for the city council, the county board, the legislature, the Congress, the president must be asked where he stands and what's his commitment to the environmental issue. And
Tia Nelson, your father, former Governor U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson, when you hear his words, beyond a personal reflection, his bipartisan approach, his inclusive approach, what does it say to you?
Well, it's really interesting to reflect on that today. The environment, the first Earth Day, in September of 1970, after the first Earth Day, amendments to the Clean Air Act passed without a single no vote in the United States Senate.
Wow.
Richard Nixon created the Environmental Protection Agency to guarantee every American's right to drink clean water and breathe clean air. It was a multi-generational and bipartisan call to arms, and it was wildly successful. It was successful beyond my father's wildest dreams. I was in Rio de Janeiro at the Earth Summit in 1992 when George Herbert Walker Bush stood before the leaders of the world, nearly 200 countries at the time, signed the Framework Convention on Climate Change and said, we shall lead the world in addressing this challenge of climate change. So it's obviously a source of great disappointment and concern and despair for me that these issues have become partisan in the way they have, which is why that clip you played from my father, there was one more line after it, which I have in front of me and which I think is important. He said, you elect to office those who stand with you and you throw out of office those who don't. It's as simple as that. You have the power if you use it. So being an environmental voter is a really powerful thing to do. It's more important than ever. And politicians have to be responsive. We have to prioritize the environment as an issue. And so we've got a lot of challenges ahead of us. But I never forget the power of individual action. My father's own story is so inspiring to me. Or I think of someone like Rosa Parks, who couldn't possibly have known that the simple act of saying no when told to go to the back of the bus would change the trajectory of the civil rights movement, for example. Or Greta Thunberg, who sat in silent protest on the issue of climate change in front of the Swedish parliament. And through that inspiring but simple and quiet act, it launched a global climate youth movement that today is having a big impact. And if you you want a sense of hope, look at the polling on the issue of climate change among youth. Irrespective of political inclinations, political affiliations, political party, youth care about the issue of climate change, Democrats and Republicans. When those kids organize and vote, they're going to make a difference and are a critical part of prioritizing the environment today and for the future.
Tia Nelson, just a couple minutes left here. I appreciate your time so much. Quickly, what are you up to today? What projects are you working on? And beyond voting, which of course is probably the most important thing we could do, what's just one or two things we could all do on this Earth Day to do our part?
Talk about the issues you care about for the environment. Vote. Join an organization that works in a manner that is meaningful to you. I'm working as an ambassador for Wisconsin's Green Fire, whose mission is to advance science-based analysis and policy to address Wisconsin's environmental challenges. They're an awesome group. There's so many Wisconsin-based environmental groups, from Gathering Waters to the Nature Conservancy, the Audubon to Clean Wisconsin, to Wisconsin's Green Fire. There's something for everybody. I also serve on a board for a group called Eco America, which works with faith communities and health communities to empower those messengers to share their concerns and perspectives on what it means to be good stewards of our fragile earth. And so, you know, get involved, talk about it, vote, join an organization.
Tia Nelson, thank you so much. We did a tour of Wisconsin a couple of weeks ago in 5 cities in 5 days. And you know, beyond the Packers and cheese curds and Wisconsin beer, it seems our natural resources, our parks, our environment are something we could all agree on as Wisconsinites that helps make Wisconsin great. A large part of that is to your late father and to you as well. Thank you for taking the time. Happy Earth Day and keep fighting the fight.
Happy Earth Day. I'm grateful.
Tia Nelson, ladies and gentlemen, back with our friend Matt Flynn and his reflection of the late great governor and senator after this in the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. The Shaw, WAUK.
If you're grilling this weekend, be sure to have plenty of Village Hearth buns on hand. Fancy equipment and secret sauces are great, but once you've mastered the basics, it's all about the bun. Your perfectly grilled burgers and hot dogs deserve the best, and with several varieties to choose from, including unsliced old-fashioned, classic white or wheat, country potato, and mini sliders, the bakers of Village Hearth have the buns your family will love. Village Hearth buns, locally baked and delivered fresh daily.
It's 2024 and Worthington, Minnesota continues to shine. We've expanded so many things. It's a time of growth.
We've expanded recreation activities with our indoor ice arena, our indoor turf rec center and playground, and our outdoor water park, Water World, is ready for another season. Our schools have expanded, and so has our industry. We're continuing to expand our population also, with lots ready to build on Glenwood Heights. So let's grow together in Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look.
You're listening to The Shaw, W-A-U-K, Waukesha's home for Matt Nair on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to this weekend's edition of Civic Media Spotlight. We now head to a segment from Busted Pencils, where Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny have a conversation around a Tennessee proposal to arm teachers.
Yeah, you're going to hear the frustration in the music. That's the way I'm feeling tonight. Busted Pencils, fully leaded. Education talk, educated educators talking education. The number's 855-752-4842. Gun violence, solution to gun violence. Well, in Tennessee, according to the lawmaker that sponsored the bill, he's just making kids safer. You can now, as a teacher, carry a gun through a conceal situation. Lots of details that we're going to get into here as we come forward with this. The decision then, because Johnny said it'll be up to the teacher and the principal to make the decision as to whether they want to do that. So no one's going to say, "Teacher Hallie, you have to carry a gun." You know what, though? I'm a little bit going with the, well, wait. So if I say no and something goes wrong, then I'm going to be blamed because I'm the teacher that said I didn't want a gun. And now, or the principal, what principal is going to step up and go, you know what? Yeah, I'm not going to bring guns in my school, and then deal with the pressure. All of these pressures and societal things, it's just a mess. Okay, we'll take a second, though. Joanne from Madison's on the line. Hopefully Joanne can give us some reasoning to think through this. Joanne, what's happening, our friend?
What an issue. I'm so appalled in so many different ways, but I have a practical question. I'm wondering about a personal insurance that school participants could carry, who that would defend, you know, so they could be defended if something went wrong. When I was teaching in a university that had AFT supporting it, we were, you know, as part of our AFT dues, we had $250,000 of personal insurance, you know, if something would go wrong, if we, you know, inappropriately touch a student or something like that. And at least we could have some legal defense along those lines. And I'm just wondering, has there been any mention of that teachers would need to have some insurance so that they could defend themselves? For what will inevitably happen. I mean, a gun will go off in somebody's pants or something like that and scare people, whatever, it'll happen. So, is this whole idea of insurance for liability for insurance passé? Maybe it's old school.
Joanne, thank you. No, actually, it's a really good question. Johnny, you're looking at the details. I don't want to be specific, but I did see concerns about that issue and saying that if a, quote, accidental thing happens, will the teachers have any ability to defend themselves? And if they will, and as you say, is there an insurance policy? Because if you're going to make me carry a gun, I might want like $250,000 worth of money behind it in case I do happen to shoot my own kneecap off. I could sue myself or something like that. I don't know.
Well, Tim, it's going to fall under the liability of having a concealed carry permit with some additional training that's required. And I'm not advocating for this. Like, I'm just going to be really clear from all angles. I think this is a terrible idea. And I think we'll pivot to like, what do we all mean by safety? Because we have four really experienced educators here who think really different about safety than, I'll call it out, the political agenda of the people putting this bill forward. This is really about arguing for Second Amendment rights and putting teachers and children right in the middle of this in a very dangerous way. So really, to be quite blunt with Joanne, I don't know the details of like how the teachers' unions in Tennessee, or if the, you know, the teacher association is scrambling to figure this out. But this is going to, again, like most issues around this, this is to individualize responsibility. This is to move away from collectively working towards peace in our communities and to put it into individual responsibilities where we could blame an individual if there is an accident. We could say, well, that person made a mistake. They should be held responsible for it. So it's, you know, it's many layers of a bad idea, but for one reason, like caller Joanne was saying, it's not a matter of when an accident happens. We know this around gun statistics. It's a matter of that it will happen.
Will.
And I would only hope that it was someone was scared because a gun went off, and more likely it's going to be somebody is shot and killed. Mm-hmm. If not more than one person, many people.
Hey, check Larry. Yeah, Larry from Tennessee. Let's go right where it's happening. Larry from Tennessee, what's happening, friend?
How you doing, man? This is Larry Prophet. I'm one of the badass teachers, and I have fought against this happening for many years. As a matter of fact, the last time they got close to this, I spoke in committee and was accosted by a legislator outside the committee room and basically said I was denying those teachers Second Amendment rights. This has never been about safety. That's Tennessee right. Firearm Association makes the NRA look like a bunch of Girl Scouts. I literally, having run for office before because education is not put where it needs to be, I was told by one of their members that if they could own a tank and put it in their yard, they should be able to do it. They want no laws inhibiting it. And our Senate and our House both expelled people from the chambers because they did not want to hear people telling them how stupid it was while they were doing it. And so they threw all the protesters out, people who were there to have their voice raised. And it's crazy. And I've told people, when guns come in my school, I'm through teaching. And I'm not going to do it, man, because let's say you have a teacher who's carrying. They've got to carry. They've got to carry, or it does no good to have it anyway. But if you're carrying, and let's say you slip. A bullet ricochets, it hits a student, a peer. Who's going to pay for the medication it'll take to help you sleep the rest of your life? Because if I shot one of my students or one of the teachers, and I'm telling you, more guns don't help. I live in a gun. I have three guns myself. We live in a county where there are plenty of guns. If more guns helped, we wouldn't have to worry about people getting to our schools. So more guns does not help. And so we just finally defeated the voucher bill again, and people were so excited about that, but I knew this gun thing was coming, and it's hard to be excited. And I tell you, man, I was glad to see when Mike posted that this was going to be on tonight, and I was sure wanting to get on there. But I'm telling you, you can't find 10 teachers and 10 of them out of 10 will not tell you they want this. Now, I have met teachers that do. Oh, I think it's okay. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, man. I know what kind of pressure teachers are under over test scores. I sure don't want to have it with a gun.
Larry from Tennessee, man. You know,
thanks for calling. Thanks for being a teacher.
Thanks for being a teacher. And man, stay in there. Teacher Joanna, I see you got the look there of like, and you put in the text, I can't believe this is a choice. What do you say to teacher Larry?
Well, too, thank you for calling in. It is wonderful to hear directly from a badass teacher that has direct experience. We know what that means, the bats. And just hearing him again, hearing another educator explain all the scenarios that we, you know, to me, it's like we're inviting these problems. And it's like, oh, my God, we have so many problems and that we have to just, this is really hard for me. It's hard to think like these are the conversations we are having to have. I appreciate and recognize what Johnny and Larry both brought up, that this is at, you know, because you get stuck in the loop, like this actually isn't about schools. And that's always hard to reconcile with.
Man, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk.
Busted Pencils is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings at 6 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is the Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Fierce tornadoes tore across Oklahoma, causing significant damage and debris. CBS's Omar Villafranca is in Sulphur.
We can see that this tornado kind of went through the main street, and you're just seeing piles of brick, of stone, of wood. We're seeing trees that were snapped in half.
It's a tight race for the White House. According to the latest CBS News poll, Jennifer DePinto's the deputy director of surveys.
President Biden leads Donald Trump by 2 points in Michigan, while Trump has a 1-point edge over Biden in Pennsylvania and in Wisconsin.
Ceasefire negotiations continue today in the Middle East, a day after Hamas released another hostage video. This woman's uncle, Keith Siegel, was one of the two shown. She told Face the Nation,
"This is the first time that we're seeing him, that we're hearing him. It's surreal."
It's believed they're still holding over 100 hostages in Gaza. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Yankees crushed the Brewers. I'm Mike Clemens of Sports. It was a long night for the crew. The Yankees beat the Brewers at AmFam Field last night 15-3. Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo, Giancarlo Stanton, all with home runs. Milwaukee starting pitcher Joe Ross giving up the first 7 runs in 5 innings. NBA, more bad news for the Bucks. Damian Lillard doubtful. An MRI shows he has a strained Achilles. Expected not to play in Game 3 tonight in Indy. The Pacers lead the series 2-1. NFL, the Packers add 11 more players in the draft, including Tulane quarterback Michael Pratt, who got a call last night in the 7th round, just getting out of the pool when the call came through.
What's up, man? How you doing? I'm doing well. I'm here with all my family and friends. Yes, sir.
Well, get your jackets.
Green Bay.
That's Tulane quarterback Michael Pratt. With Sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Showers and thunderstorms tonight and temperatures in the mid-50s. Scattered showers on your Monday. It will be breezy again with a high near 69. Monday night, partly cloudy, 46. And we clear things out for Tuesday, sunshine with highs near 70. Showers return Tuesday night.
Currently 42 degrees.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on The Shaw. 101.1 FM and 540 AM WAUK. And on the Civic Media app.
Why choose Weikert Realtors? Because your community is our community. We're your neighbors, your students, your chefs, your soldiers, your builders, your actors, your musicians, and your radio personalities. We love this city as much as you do, and that's why we want to help you live your best life here. Because we are your realtors. Call us today and let us help you find your next home. 608-821-7002 or visit Weikert-LakePoint.com. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, a home for all.
Flood risk can change over time, and a community's flood insurance rate map shows how those risks could affect you. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, has developed preliminary flood insurance rate maps for Washington County. FEMA also provides an appeals process for anyone with information that may change their flood hazard determination. To view maps, find your property's risk level, and details on the appeals process, please visit dnrwi.gov and search Washington County flood maps. This message is brought to you by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and FEMA.
What does cheese, beer, and you have to do with local radio?
I know. It's Todd Alba and the Trick V. Olsen's What Makes Wisconsin Great Tour.
To get out of your own little silo and just listen to folks, you find out Wisconsin is pretty darn great already.
It's great to be from Wisconsin, Todd. It's just such a fantastic place.
Miss them in your town, more visits, and your chance to connect coming up.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Crude and Dom.
Tune in for the devil's advocates. More Trump trials in Manhattan. We'll find out who's on the prosecution's witness list. Tune in, devil's advocates. The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media Spotlight. To learn more about the network's programming, go to civicmedia.us/shows. We now head to Matt and Air On Air, where Jane and Greg had a conversation with Bob Lord from Patriotic Millionaires about the tax policy in the United States and the possibility of America's first trillionaire in the next few years.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt and Air On Air. Jane, Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Calvin, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join, you can call, you can text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Before we get to our next guest, thank you for Lynn from Oconomowoc texting this in. President Biden has signed that $95 billion aid measure to help out Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. So some breaking news this morning. I wasn't expecting he would get this signed until tomorrow, but he has now signed it, and aid will be moving to those countries, which is very, very important. Our next guest, so many questions. Bob Lord is the tax policy advisor for Patriotic Millionaires. Good morning, Bob. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. For people who don't know, members of the Patriotic Millionaires, and this is from your website, high net worth Americans, business leaders, and investors who are all concerned about historic levels of inequality and essentially the concentration of wealth, which turns into the concentration of power in this country. So Patriotic Millionaires has been around for a while, and you have a great article in Mother Jones Magazine, Bob, and we're going to include the link to your article in our show notes when the show is over. But you start with Forbes Magazine that was founded in 1982 when they first came out with their 400 richest Americans. And the at the time, in the number one slot was this Daniel Ludwig, who was worth about $2 billion. There were only 13 billionaires in that first Forbes 100. Where are we now?
Number of billionaires?
Yeah.
Oh, I think Forbes has it at like 850 or something like that. But if you looked at the actual numbers, they're probably well over 1,000. Because, you know, Forbes will catch someone, you know, like Jeff Bezos that everybody knows about. But just some guy out there with a billion-dollar bond portfolio, they're not going to pick that up.
That's just not even worth it. It's so little. The poorest members of the latest Forbes 400 are worth almost $3 billion. And the share of the nation's wealth controlled by the richest 0.01% has more than tripled since 1982. So,
and just so people understand who that is, that 0.01%, it's about 13,000 households. These folks, we have a population of 330 million people. These folks could fit inside a ballpark.
And they control the vast majority of the wealth.
Well, not the majority, but 10% of the wealth. That's a lot for people who are 1/10,000th of the population.
So when did all of this start, Bob? Did this start under the tax policies of Ronald Reagan?
Pretty much. I mean, it started a little bit in 1978, but it really took off with Reagan. And it's just kind of ironic that Forbes first published this list in 1982 when it was really just, in its infancy.
Bob Lord is our guest. He's the tax policy advisor for Patriotic Millionaires. And we're talking taxes and tax cuts and how over the last 30 years, essentially, more and more wealth has been accumulated by the same people. And that translates into power and that translates into influence. Let's talk about the 2017 tax cut that was Paul Ryan's biggest dream since he was in college, was to cut taxes for the wealthy. How has that worked out for the average American?
Not well. I mean, it hasn't hurt them for the most part. But basically what they did with this 2017 tax cut is they gave real affirmative tax cuts to those at the very top. You know, like the corporate rate was slashed. The top rate for individuals was lowered by three full percentage points. For the average person, they just kind of moved things around a little bit. You know, like they took away the exemption for the deduction you get for personal exemptions and for your kids, but then they they increased the child tax credit and increased the standard deduction, and they lowered the marginal rates a little bit. But then they did something kind of sneaky, and that's why what happened was, initially people had not a very modest tax cut, but noticeable,
right,
that diminished over time. And what they did is they changed the way tax rates and deductions adjust for inflation, and they made that less generous. So it starts out your first year under the Trump tax cuts, 2018, you do okay, not great, but okay. But then it gets skinnier and skinnier over time. And so now we're to the point where average people pretty much are in the same position they would have been had there never been Trump tax cuts. But the folks knocking down $5 million a year, they're doing great.
We got to protect the job creators, Bob. We hear this so much that they're
it trickles down, Jane.
Right.
It trickles down.
I've been waiting a long time for that trickle, and it hasn't come yet. And I,
Al Sharpton had a great phrase. He said, we're feeling the down, but where's the trickle?
Yeah.
we're feeling something, and it's not rain. How could we balance this? Because as you said, since the tax cut in 2017, average Americans have seen their savings get smaller and smaller and smaller until we're essentially back where we were. And now the wealthy just keep doing really, really, really well. What kind of policies could be instituted to balance things out a little bit? Should they be balanced a little bit?
They should be balanced a little bit. And, you know, the tax code is the last defense against undue wealth concentration. It's the firewall. And to work that way, it needs to do one of three things, or one or more of three things, I should say. It needs to either tax wealth, it needs to tax the growth in wealth, what I call real economic income, or it needs to tax the transmission of wealth from one generation to the next. And right now it does none of the three. We have an estate and gift tax system, but it's so loophole ridden that you got guys like Trump's former advisor, Gary Cohn, saying only morons pay the estate tax. And he's right in the sense that the estate tax is optional. I used to work in that area. And, you know, someone worth in the billions even, if they can't do it right before they die, but if they've got a couple decades left to live, they can systematically take their estate and move it to their kids, basically free of estate and gift tax. We don't tax wealth. We don't tax real economic income because we don't tax the unrealized gains that these folks hold in their investment assets. You know, someone like Jeff Bezos, he's sitting on $200 billion of gains in his Amazon stock. That's not subject to income tax. And you know what? When he dies, there's $200 billion of gains. They just go poof, they're gone. His kids can then sell and not have to pay any income tax. There's a strategy that's kind of well known. The ProPublica folks made this well known. It was actually the term was coined by a professor at the University of Southern California, called buy, borrow, die, where you buy, or in the case of Bezos, you create a corporation. And then as the stock becomes more and more valuable, or as your office building becomes more and more valuable, whatever, instead of selling, you borrow against it, because borrowing isn't a taxable event. You use the borrowing to make other investments or to fund your living expenses. And then you die. And when you die, all the gains magically go away. Buy, borrow, die.
I'm just processing all of this, Bob. It's just
we need a moment to reboot, Jane.
Bob Lord is our guest, and he's the tax policy advisor for Patriotic Millionaires, and we're talking about the unbelievable accumulation of wealth by a very, very small percentage of Americans, and the larger concern about what that concentration of money means when it comes to influence and power. Greg, I know you had some questions for Bob.
So.
You know, one thing that it baffles me, and I'm sure you've had this question or this discussion many times before, which is, you know, a lot of people who support the lawmakers who are putting forth these pieces of legislation or creating tax laws with loopholes for millionaires and billionaires and just a little for us, they're not rich. They're making 20, 30,000, 40,000, but they're like, I'm voting for that guy because he's protecting the job creators. He's protecting the people who make this country great. How is it that the wool has been pulled over their eyes and we cannot get them to understand the game is rigged? You're never going to be in their place. You have a better chance of being hit by lightning than becoming a billionaire, even in the same way someone like a Jeff Bezos or a Elon Musk would be. How is it that these individuals continually look to the lawmakers and the billionaires as like, yes, yes, one day
it's going to be me.
Yeah, it's like a lottery mentality. Like one day my prince will come, and that prince is money.
Well, I think that the people who are supposedly their champions don't really talk to them the right way. Put taxes aside. What about the minimum wage?
Mm-hmm.
It's pathetic. It's at $7.25 an hour still. Some states and some cities have raised it locally, but I think there are still 20 or 25 states where the wage is still $7.25 an hour. That's, you make $7.25, you work 40 hours a week, you're deep in poverty at that point, no matter where you live in the country. And we've got Democratic senators who refuse to budge on that. They don't want to support an increase in the minimum wage. The patriotic millionaires have, we sum it up in really 9 words: tax the rich, pay the people, spread the power. And that message has to get out there. We need real champions, and we don't have them. And then the other problem is, and I'm kind of getting astray here, but when you look at the legislative process, there's this hyper focus on how much revenue some tax provision raises. And when you get into the weeds on it, they don't really raise that much in the first 10 years, especially like if you're talking about reforming the estate tax, because people aren't going to die within the next 10 years. The focus should be on breaking up this concentration of wealth, which is destabilizing our democracy. So it shouldn't matter whether a tax reform proposal raises X billion dollars. It should be that it's going to knock down the wealth of these super wealthy families. And nobody's speaking like that. They're talking about, well, we can raise $1 billion and it'll fund blah, blah, blah program. No, it's we can tax these guys so they don't have so much darn political power. And that message needs to get out there.
But I worry, Bob, I worry that these ultra wealthy people then won't be able to buy a fifth yacht or compete with Jeff Bezos. The hardships that they would face should they actually be required to pay a little more.
Well, there's a lot of jobs in building a yacht, Jane. It shouldn't be so simple.
He is a job creator. That yacht that takes him to his bigger yacht, which takes him to his super yacht.
Employee.
There's a lot of money going into that.
That's true.
Well, yeah.
I wasn't thinking.
The jobs may be, by the way, in the Netherlands.
I was going to say, they're not in America either.
There's that too. If you have a comment or a question for Bob Lord, who is the tax policy advisor for Patriotic Millionaires, please shoot us a text at 855-752-4842. Bob, can we keep you for another segment?
Sure.
That would be great. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. We're coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You need not wonder why.
Matt Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
It's a polka party, and for good reason. 30 years ago, legislation making the polka our state dance became official in Pulaski.
I think everybody in Pulaski showed up in Zielinski Hall or on the streets because it was a polka day celebration.
That's then-Governor Tommy Thompson who signed the legislation in April 1994. But do you know who got the barrel rolling on the idea in the first place? The Wisconsin Polka Boosters, a class of second graders, or the State Folk Museum? The answer coming up.
It's tradition. It's culture. It's food. It's beer. You know, heritage.
Heritage back to the 1840s when the polka became popular with Europeans and came to America with them. So who started the Make Polka Our State Dance movement? A class of Madison second graders, but the Boosters and Folk Museum supported those efforts. It's a cultural slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We round out this hour of Civic Media Spotlight with a conversation on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, where Pete was joined by local celebrity and PBS host John McGiver.
Welcome back. Coming up in hour number two, we talk yacht rock. It's basically a new genre of music, and it is sweeping the country, and you're going to want to hear my interview with Philly Ocean from Yachtly Crew. That's coming up, and they do original songs too, so that'll be fun. My guest right now from PBS and the show Main Streets is John McGivern. He is performing this Friday night. If you're listening, we're on statewide, but if you're listening in the Green Bay area, he is performing Friday night at the Ashwaubenon Performing Arts Center. It's an evening with John McGivern. John, are there still tickets available?
There are. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah. I mean, not perfect. You want ultimately you want them all to be gone, but you know.
Not a lot.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. So you can still get tickets. I promise you it will be a really entertaining evening. So you were saying the other five Emmys you got, John, was that all from PBS work?
It was. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's, man. You got them visible there on your shelves? If you turn your camera, can we see the Emmys or no?
I don't. I have them right when you walk in my front door because that's the kind of affirmation I need.
That's great. So, hey, you were also in a movie called The Princess Diaries. That's pretty good credit. What was that like?
It was great. You know, Gary Marshall, who directed that, came to see Sheer Madness in San Francisco and waited after and said, I'm shooting a movie here and I want you to be a part of it, which was so great. So there was no audition. There was no sort of like, did your agent call? And we shot it in San Francisco and then we shot a scene in Los Angeles. I played Bruce McIntosh, the trolley car operator. She crashed into my trolley and then knighted me Lord of the Rose, Julie Andrews. And as a gay guy, I couldn't have been more excited. Just like, it was like, oh my God, I'm working with Julie Andrews. It was the best.
That is really cool.
First movie. So,
oh man.
Yeah.
Isn't that great? Would you just kind of luck into something? Not luck. Yeah. I mean, you earned it, but it just sort of fell into your lap, so to speak. Those are the great, great moments, I think, too.
It was great. And he was kind. So
he's a legend. I mean, Gary Marshall, the Desert Inn Has Heart, right? From Lost in America. He's like one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite scenes in the film. But love Gary Marshall.
There we go.
And I love John McGivern, and he's here. And I'm going to ask you, John, I'm going to put you on the spot. You've been everywhere in Wisconsin pretty much.
Yeah.
What, aside from Marinette, what is your favorite area you visited when you were doing either show?
You know, it's hard to say. I'll tell you a few. You know, it's usually the one we're working in that week is kind of how it works for me. I'm like, oh my Lord, this is the best. You know, we did Galena, Illinois, season two of Main Streets, and Galena was something that if people haven't visited, they should. We did Sheboygan Falls in Around the Corner, and I'm telling you, it was one of my favorite episodes. Really? It's the most quaint, beautiful Cream City brick downtown and just screams of history. I DePere we shot. I loved DePere. I had no idea that it was two towns that call themselves one. It's like on either side of the river. And it's like, oh, you're kidding me. So that they are they both called DePere? And they're like, it is DePere, you idiot. It's like, come on. They have a great candy shop. They have a beautiful coffee roaster there that is named a coffee after our show. And it's
nice.
It's good. Yeah. So DePere was great. I loved it.
Oh, that's so cool. If you had, okay. So if someone was going to visit Wisconsin, John, yeah, and said, I can only see one thing, given your knowledge of our state, where would you tell them to go? What would you tell them to see?
Probably Madison. Yeah, you know, last week's episode was Madison, Wisconsin, and we did State Street from the Capitol to the campus. And I just think Madison is really, we have an incredible Capitol building that people need to just take a walk around. And the campus of UW is remarkable, and State Street needs to be experienced.
It absolutely does. I go there about once a month, and I never tire ever of walking State Street between the Capitol and Bascom Hill. It's just, it's a gem. That's a great answer. So
we have a great episode coming up this week. It's the last episode of the season, and it's called A Visit to Clipsville. And it's all the behind the scenes. It's a half hour of outtakes and behind the scenes,
nice,
and how we make the show. We shot it in Plum Studio, and Emmy and I, we love doing it. And I saw it just a couple of weeks ago, and I think it's really, it tells it all. It tells how that, you know, how the stuff is made. So I'm excited about it. And that's Thursday night on every PBS station at 7 o'clock in the state of Wisconsin. And we're in 23 markets around the Midwest.
Wow. Yeah. I remember hearing a stat that your show was the most viewed show on PBS, and it's not even on nationwide. That's incredible. That's so many eyes on your show. That's amazing.
We were like, wait, what?
Yeah.
We're the number one show on Thursday nights on any PBS station or market in the country. We were like, you've got to be kidding. And so that was around the corner, and Main Streets just got that the last like 5 weeks.
Oh, so fantastic. So you take that article in with you when you renegotiate your contract, I assume?
What's your point, Pete?
How much do you need? I want in on this, John. I'm in. I don't care if it's a pyramid scheme. Okay, so John, one more thing for you. What we do on the show is we talk about movies and TV we're watching, whether it's binge watching, cringe watching, whatever. When you're not filming your awesome TV shows, what does John McGivern watch, and what can you recommend?
You know what we just finished? My partner and I just finished, and you're going to be like, wait, what? Were you in a cave, Mr. Man? We just finished Breaking Bad.
Oh, hey, that's great.
We watched Saul first, and we were like, oh my God, it's so good. But Breaking Bad, I think when it started, we watched a couple and we were like, too much. And now we just finished 3 nights ago. We finished the last episode.
I'm kind of envious that you started with Saul, which is a prequel. And most people didn't do it that way. And what I was going to say to you is you're not late to the party, because there's so much content on now. You can't possibly keep up. So the fact that you saw it at all was really cool. Hey, this was so much fun tonight, John. Thank you for your time, buddy. It's great to see you again, and continued success, and kick some butt. Blow the roof off the dump on Friday, will you?
Thanks, Pete. I really appreciate it. Good to see you. Have a great night.
That's John McGivern from Main Streets on PBS. You can catch John this Friday night at the Ashwaubenon Performing Arts Center. It's an evening with John McGivern, April 26th, Friday. Check him out. He is just a joy to watch, whether it's on TV or live, and just a great all-around guy. So when we come back, we're going to read your texts and find out what you guys are saying when it comes to the worst or best last. Oh, I should have asked John while we had him, Conrad.
He probably would have said good ending is Breaking Bad then.
Probably. All right, we'll do that next time. But we're going to come back, read your texts. We're going to hear something from Yachtly Crew, and then we'll talk to them and find out more about this craze that we call Yacht Rock. This is Pete Schwabe and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Here comes my baby. Here she comes now.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Up North News Radio.
Earl Ingram.
Monday morning, join me as I stroll through memory lane and take in the sounds of the Motor City. It's Motown Mondays.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
Big deals. The WAUK Big Deal Store is open and has 30% savings at some of the area's best restaurants. The Delafield Brew House, Taylor's People's Park, and Max Macaroni and Cheese. You simply go to WAUKradio.com, click on the Big Deals tab, and save. You'll also find 30% off at Sal's Pizza, Juanita's Sushi and Seafood, and Club 400. Again, go to WAUKradio.com, click on Big Deals, choose Waukesha, and save on your next great meal with Big Deals from WAUK.
Listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.